WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
What are the redeeming merits, if any, of the mosquito? Why is the act of sex invariably fatal for some species of salmon? These are the types of questions that inspired David Quammen to write his column Natural Acts, which is published in Outside Magazine. Quammen is one of the leading explainers of the natural world. He won a National Magazine Award for Essays and Criticism. Many of his essays were collected in the book Natural Acts. Quammen leads a literary double life. He's the author of the thrillers The Zolta Configuration and The Soul of Viktor Tronko. His new book is a collection of short stories titled Bloodline, Stories of Fathers and Sons. I spoke with David Quammen from member station KEMC in Billings, Montana. I asked him how he ended up both a novelist and a naturalist.
I started off as a novelist. The first thing I ever published was a novel about 17 years ago, but then I discovered that it was pretty hard to make a living writing novels unless you were one of the few bestseller people. So I sort of drifted into nonfiction and then eventually into science journalism simply as a way of earning a living, as a way of paying the rent.
Do those two kinds of writing frequently take you in opposite directions?
They take my time and my attention in opposite directions sometimes. During the period of about 3 years when I was writing The Soul of Viktor Tronko, I spent a lot of time reading Russian memoirs, memoirs of KGB defectors, other books about the Soviet Union, Soviet history, Soviet intelligence affairs. And none of that really did me any good in the science writing. I'd work for 3 weeks of each month on the Russian defector novel, and then I'd set that down and go scrambling off and start reading about scorpion biology or the ecology of rainforests or something like that. But the variety was also something that helped to energize me, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Let's talk about your science essays. You've said that you don't want your science essays to be seen as freak shows for unusual insects and animals. Do you think it's tempting to respond to insects and animals as freak shows?
My natural inclination is to write about, to go places that no one else wants to go to and write about creatures that no one else wants to think about, the scorpions and the black widow spiders and sea cucumbers and giant snakes and things like that. So there is a tendency, a natural tendency, I suppose, to see these as a freak show, but the species that don't benefit from sort of a natural emotional sympathy that we have toward a large brown-eyed mammal, those are the species that test not just our likes and dislikes, but matters of principle about how we think of other species.
Well, I learned in one of your essays about spiders that some spiders have 8 eyes. Almost like one for each leg. And I also learned in that essay that you are really repulsed by spiders. And I was wondering if you are at once repulsed and attracted to the same things.
Well, in some ways, yes. I am repulsed by spiders. Most of them have at least 8 eyes. And if you've ever looked at a close-up photograph, say, of the face of a black widow spider, it's just a shockingly, bizarrely hideous countenance, at least to our tastes. And I've always had queasy feelings toward spiders, although not toward lots of the other creatures that I write about. For instance, I've always loved snakes and considered them very beautiful animals. I've always detested spiders and thought they were very ugly. But I've been interested in both of them, and I've also been interested in the question of why I have that different reaction, why spiders give me such queasy feelings and why snakes seem so beautiful. I say also in one of the essays that I don't trust any creature with more than 6 legs and more than 2 eyes. But that's not to say that I'm not fascinated by them.
Yeah, well, you got to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, I'd like to draw it at 6 legs and 2 eyes, but that leaves some things out that we have to include in.
In your science essays, you're looking at insects, birds, animals. In literature, it's really humans that you're studying.
Well, it is, although it's humans to some extent in my science essays, too. But there is a big difference between the kind of thing I write in fiction and the sorts of science essays that I do. There are probably a couple of themes that turn up again and again in my fiction, but they have no connection marine iguanas or the bizarreness of life on island, certainly.
In your new book, Bloodline, there's a couple of stories where sons really don't like their fathers because of what their fathers have forced them to do. And there are sons who accidentally shoot their fathers and their fathers suffer long, agonizing deaths. Are there images that you had to get out of your system in writing this? Images of sons and fathers not getting along and of sons accidentally being responsible for the deaths of their fathers?
Well, in some deep sense, probably yes, or the stories wouldn't have gotten written. They're not directly autobiographical. I have, and this book may seem to seem to belie that, but I have a very, very good relationship with my father and always have, so it's not as direct a relationship as that. But I have had an ear for, I guess, the difficulty of relationships between sons and strong-willed fathers over the years. And there's also the question of pseudo-fathers or surrogate fathers or even fathers in the sense of literary influence. And on one level, the book is, I suppose, about that, about the impulse and necessity for patricide against a writer's literary fathers.
Why would you want to metaphorically kill them off?
Well, I went through a long period when I was just totally immersed in and obsessed with William Faulkner and his work. I'm sure that Faulkner's had that effect on lots of writers, but in a sense, that's what was going on, that one of the fathers who had to die was the literary father, William Faulkner, so that I could escape from this just obsessive, very fruitful, but in some ways stifling impact that he had on me.
So do you feel you've done that?
Well, I hope so. I don't reread Absalom Absalom once a year anymore, and I have this book and the Uriah's Letter story out of my system. So yes, yeah, I hope I can keep Faulkner at a healthy distance and in a healthy perspective from now on.
You know, in your writing as a science journalist, you have to deal a certain amount with the predatory nature of animals and insects. And in your literature, you're dealing with guilt. Guilt in father-son relationships, guilt at being responsible for accidental deaths. And it made me think that guilt isn't something that you would deal with as a science journalist, that there isn't that sense of guilt in animals and insects who feed on others.
Well, there certainly isn't that sense of guilt, although some people would like to see it there. There has been, over the years, a tendency to see predators as enemies of human interests. I mean, all the killing of wolves and of cougars that went on early in this century, that's done a lot of harm over the years, that sort of a view.
You're living in Montana now. What drew you there?
At the beginning, trout. It was as simple as that, a one-word answer, trout. I came up here in 73 after graduate school for the trout fishing. I'd never been in the state of Montana, but I knew that there were a lot of rivers up here, and the rivers were cold and clear and full of trout. And I stayed for other reasons. I don't trout fish much at all anymore, but I discovered the great wild, good-hearted redneck ethos that Montana possesses, and that combined with the snow and the solitude is what's kept me here.
Is there a big refugee community comprised of people like yourself who have fled from cities or suburban communities?
There is, yeah. There are lots of people who fled New Jersey and New York and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and are now very dyed-in-the-wool Montanans. But I should say that it's cold and miserable and lonely up here, and other people probably would not enjoy it.
Right, I get the message. Keep out. Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your science essays and your fiction.
Thank you, Terry. It's a pleasure.
David Quammen's new book of short stories, Bloodline, is published by Grey Wolf. A new collection of his nature essays, titled The Flight of the Iguana, is due out soon. This is Fresh Air.